Shavua Tov, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our second shiur in this year's series. And the title of this week's shiur is Talmud Torah. And we begin by citing a din in the Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya, Simen Reish Memvov, Sivvov. It's almost a verbatim quotation from the Rambam in the first paragraph of Hilchos Talmud Torah. Isha shalom de Torah yesh lo schar. Aval lo schar ki ish, shmimei she'ena mitzubah v'yosa. We have a general principle that one who is commanded to perform a mitzvah and does it has a greater level of reward than one who does it voluntarily. It may sound counterintuitive to us. Tosfos explains, one is commanded, then there's a greater yetzahara you have to overcome. Okay. Aval pi sheyesh lo schar, even though there is reward for one to learn Torah, sibu chachamim shelo yalamed odem esbito Torah. The rabbis ordered, commanded, not to teach one's daughter Torah. Nesharov anoshim ein daitan mechuvenes l'islamet. Most women are not, their mind is not set in order to be taught properly. Umotzios divrei Torah l'divrei havai. And they take the divrei Torah and they will reach wrong conclusions. L'fianir's daitan. That's the first sentence. This sentence is a sentence. But the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch continue. Amru Chachamim, kol melamed es bito Torah, kilu melamdo tiflus. One who teaches his daughter Torah, as if he teaches her tiflus. Now, what does tiflus mean? It's machlokas Rashi and the Rambam. The Rashi says devar avera. If one looks at the context of the Gemara Masechta Sota, that's the conclusion that one seems to reach in the context of making sure that women don't behave in an immoral fashion. The Rambam seems to clearly disagree with Rashi. Understand, tiflus means what he said before, divrei havai. They won't get the halacha exactly straight. Says the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch in conclusion, v'amed devar mamurim Torah shebal peh. Torah shebal peh. Then, if one teaches his daughter that, it's as if he taught her tiflus. Aval Torah shebichsav, the written Torah, lo yalamed osa lechatchila. He shouldn't teach her in the first instance. V'yemalamda, but if he did teach her, eino kemalamda tiflus. It's not considered as if he taught her tiflus. End quote of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. They're almost word for word. The Rama hastens to add something very, very important. The woman is obligated, not just may. She's obligated to study the laws which relate to her. Absolutely. If she doesn't know the laws that relate to her, how is she going to know what to do? Obviously. If that's a davar poshut, then she's required to know these things. And we yes?
But how do you know if she won't misunderstand it? Like, she ever misunderstand anything?
It's an excellent question. The question becomes, what did the Ramah mean when he said she's required to learn the laws that apply to her? On what level is she required to learn them? It's an excellent question. So some understand it to mean that whenever a specific question comes up, so she's going to learn it, what to do in this particular case. Good. In the next case, good. Each and every case, she has to be taught in that particular case. Others are more charitable. They should learn the rules in general, and she will presumably get it right. You'll say, well, what do you mean? The Rambam said, we're afraid she's going to get it wrong. Divrei havai. So they can make the following distinction. That if she's taught the dinim, the bottom line, she's going to get it right. But the Torah Shebal Peh, what the Rambam speaks, is the broader oral law, which includes much of the pilpul, the analysis, and the back and forth, and therefore the Rambam was fearful that she might get it wrong. That's what the poskim say at the Rambam. Rambam does not mean to argue with the previous Shulchan Aruch and Rambam, but rather just to add this point, which seems to be obvious. It's also obvious that a woman is required to study the fundamentals of Emunah, of basic Jewish faith. She cannot say that. Well, that I don't know. I don't know who Avraham Avinu was. I'm not supposed to look on the Chumash. So that's also ridiculous. Everyone understands that. This is so far the black letter law. Now, if one wants to just get a brief glimpse as to where it comes from, it's always good to get some source. You can find it tomorrow. There we go. Oops, good copy.
our sources.
So the source of this whole discussion is the Gemara in Masechta Sota, and that's where the various opinions of the Tanoim and Amoraim are found. And we understand that everything that what we find in the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam has a source, that they don't make these things up out of nowhere. The Gemara Masechta Sota on Daf Chof Aleph discusses this issue. It goes back to a Mishnah on Daf Chof. Ben Azai says, Chayav Adulam Espita Torah. You're required to teach your daughter Torah. Rabbi Lazar says, according to the Rambam, no. Klamalamed Bita Torah Ki Malamed Tiflus, in the context of immorality. And the Rambam apparently seems to cite Rabbi Lazar approvingly, and he actually quotes him almost verbatim. The Gemara has a discussion of the precise details concerning this halacha, back and forth, and we find again, Moses says melamda tiflus, tiflus alkadaitach, elema ki'ilu limda tiflus. Not that the Torah is tiflus, it's as if. Why? So Rashi explains, shemitochahi mivina armumis, she become, you know, she got much more sophisticated and almost even sneaky. Va'osa dvarea be'atznea, which can lead to immorality, which is done privately. So we're discussing an Isha Tamima, as it was in those days, a very straightforward and almost naive individual, and now you're giving this individual much more sophistication, which is unhealthy. Tosus has a fascinating citation which I'll read to you. The Rishalmi quotes that Rabbi Ben Azi has a pasuk, Hakel es om ha anoshim va anoshim va taf. The women are coming to Hakel. He says, Anoshim bo lilmo, the anoshim lishmoa. What does that mean? They have to know what to do, Tosa says. Lishmoa anoshim, kadesha yedu l'kayim ha-mitzvah. As we saw in the Ramah, they have to know what to do. So of course, they have to hear the basics. Interestingly, the Rishami goes on, Tosus quotes it, a certain woman asked Rabbi Lazar a certain question about the Egel, a whole story. He gave her a very, very difficult retort. Ein isha chachama ela beplach. That means her wisdom is in weaving, and she shouldn't get involved in words of Torah. So this is Rabbi Lazar. So his Hurkanus, his son, asked him, why did you get such a harsh answer? She used to give a certain amount of mice every year, and now she's not going to give the mice anymore. So he has a financial loss based on his father's sharp retort. So his father responded to him, maybe even more sharply. Quote, this is a direct quote of the Yerushalmi, which Tosfos says over here. Yisarfu divrei Torah, v'lo yimasru divrei Torah l'noshim. Let the divrei Torah rather be burned and given over to the women. He's afraid that's going to lead them to immorality on a simple level, the way Rashi understood the Gemara. So these are very powerful words, harsh words almost, which are found in Masechta Sota and Av Chof Aleph from the Beis. It's interesting that later authorities, even those whom we considered to be, how should I say it in the proper way, more modern authorities, have sharp words. One of the more modern Rabbonim, I'm using the word, I don't mean it in a negative sense, I mean it in a very positive sense, was the Maratz Chayas. Well, it was considered to be a very broad-minded, and he was in fact criticized for that by some of the more, I guess you might call them, right-wing contemporaries. So, he first starts with in that fashion. A riot to the Rambam, that Torah Shebichsav is different. So it says in the Mishnah Nedarim, Mulamed hu es bonav es benos of Mikra. There you go. A Mishnah Nedarim seems to talk about a man teaching his daughter Mikra. His daughter. Okay? Fine. So, but the Rambam said you shouldn't do it ideally. So the Taz makes a distinction. Simple Mikra, everyone agrees it's permissible, even the Chatchila. Be'urei ha-mikros, li'yashev ha-stiris v'chadom, ha-shadrosh, ha-shvitor, ha-shvichsav, it's also l'chadchil. Teach him all the fancy drushes as they pertain to the Torah Shebichsav, it's not permissible le'chadchila. What's the right to this Taz? He quotes this Yerushalmi, which we just read in Tosfos. Okay? What did he not want to respond? He didn't want to respond, Tame ha-Torah v'inyoneho. But the Ikur Dovah about the Meister Egel and the Olchim, that didn't bother him. That's even permissible le'chadchila. Then he quotes this Shagas Aryeh in Turi Evin, Chagiga Yud Gimel. It says that we're not supposed to teach a non-Jew Torah. Says the Turi Evin, that's only to go and proactively teach him Torah. But to respond to their question is permissible, as we find often that the Chacham Yisrael responded to the non-Jewish questioners, says their Maratz Chayes. With respect to Lima Torah Noshim, there's no distinction. V'afilu l'hoshe v'ashelosim b'divrei Torah osur. Wow. By a non-Jew, we're afraid of Eva. But the Isha, the Chashashim, the Kalos Datam, osur b'chol inyan. This is Maratz Chayes. Maratz Chayes, when did he live? He lived 19th century?
1800.
Right. And he was considered, a very enlightened Rav. And this is what he says. I'm just giving you a picture. You shouldn't think this is only people speaking in the medieval era. This is the Maratz Chayes. Even the Rambam is viewed by us as the more, quote, enlightened of his contemporaries, of the Rishonim. And they're using very harsh language. Now, so where does this leave us over here? What is this, in the real world, where does this leave us? That's the question. Where are we? So, we have to understand that in approaching this so-called Isser, the word Isser I just read you from the Maratz Chayes, there are many different approaches. I'm going to give you a summary of three fundamental approaches. One is, nothing's changed. Same as always. And the prohibition exists. And you're not permitted to teach your daughter even Torah Shebichsav. Okay. Does that mean that there are individuals in today's world that do not have schools for their children? No, to my knowledge, there is no organized Jewish community today that does not have schools for their female children, for their girls. Every single one has. Except that in certain of the Hasidic populations, based on the decisions of their respective rebbes, the daughters are not taught even Torah Shebichsav. They're not taught Chumash. So how are they taught? What are they taught with? The old storybooks and folk books that exist. For example, the Tzenarena, which is very popular in certain places, and many like that. Who are the great rebbes who say this? The late, great Gaonim and Tzadikim of both Satmar and Kloisenberg. Both say the same thing, almost word for word. If you want to know where to find them, you can look in a beautiful kovetz called Or Yisrael. It's printed in Muncie. Volume Ches, from some years back, and they quote the first line of the Klosenberger Rebbe's letter, first two pages, and the Rebbe of Satmar was also quoted a little bit later on. That is their position. Yet, that's not just short. The longest article is written by the Dayan of the Belzer community. Belzer is a huge Hasidus now, and he argues vociferously and says, no, we have every right to teach our daughters Chumash. Yes, even though the Shulchan Aruch says no, we just read it, that you're not supposed to teach your daughter Chumash. Times have changed, etc., etc. So what does it mean, times have changed? So there are two ways of saying times have changed. One way is to invoke a rarely used principle, but to pull it out whenever we have to. It's called Eis Lasos Lashem Heferu Tarasech. So what we're doing is really wrong. Fundamentally, it's wrong. We're going against the halacha. We're violating an Isser. But sometimes there's no alternative. If we're not going to violate this Isser, the all Klai Yisrael is going to fall apart. It'll be much worse. Eis Las Hashem Eferet Torasech. Where do you have that most famously? The fact we write the Torah down. Torah Shabbat Peh is supposed to be about Peh. We all write it down because it was an Isser, a real Isser. What can we do? Eis Las Hashem, says the Gemara. Hey, Pharaoh, look behind me, right? Hey, Pharaoh Torasech. It's all a violation of the ideal of it should be all about Peh. There was no alternative. Here too, no alternative.
That was a
you, Well, the Rasha of Torah Shebaal Peh is going on for a few thousand years, so it may be called the Harasha, but likely to go on till Mashiach comes. That doesn't mean that if you want to use the term Harasha, I wouldn't use the term Harasha. That has a much more limited connotation. Well, I mean, again, a limited time. How many years is it since the Mishnah was committed to writing? It's going on 2,000. You know, it's not quite there yet, but it's been a long time since we have the Mishnah in writing.
But when the Mishnah was committed to writing, we didn't have a Shulchan Aruch and a Gemara that everybody agreed to follow. You know, like the rabbis were still allowed to change things, not the way we could, that we're allowed.
That's a different question. You're making a good point. You want to know why it is that they could change things then, and since the Chasimah Satalmud, we can no longer change.
Why. I'm assuming that's true.
Right.
So now, after the Chasimah Satalmud, when the Talmud was written down, obviously they made that determination that you could write it down.
Right.
So, but now, after the Chasimah Satalmud.
You are Machmir. Ed is a Machmir. He wants to say that you can only write down the Mishnah and the Gemara, because the wise men of the Gemara permitted you to write the Gemara.
Right.
But once they passed away, you can't write anything else down. The Chassam Sova suggests that.
I don't know if I said that. I said they permitted writing down Torah Shabbat Peh.
Right.
But they didn't permit teaching Torah to women.
I didn't mean that.
So why? How are we allowed to make...
That's an excellent question. So when... Who has the right to make such a pronouncement? That's right. Who? Any Tom, Dick, and Harry? Any Chaim Yankel, Shmerel Beryl? So the answer is no. You have to be someone who's up there. So I guess the Belzer Rebbe, that he's leading this man's community, is considered by his chassidim or his dayanim to be in that level, that he can make a pronouncement of Eis Las Lashem Eferet Torah Sech. Others have a somewhat different approach, and they say no. They say the prohibition which was imposed by the rabbis to teach a daughter Torah was a prohibition which was not a prohibition which is absolute. Rather, it's a prohibition which has the reason built in, and a rabbinical prohibition with a built-in reason, we can apply the principle of batel hatam, batel ha'iser. When the reason no longer exists, the prohibition no longer exists. We spoke about this on other occasions. There used to be a prohibition not to eat, to drink mayim megulim, water which was exposed for fear that there was a snake's venom was there, and if there's no snake's venom, that's no longer prohibited. Etc., etc. So there are two different ways to skin this cat, assuming there is a prohibition. My view differs from all these three views. It's not only my view, I thought it was only my view. I was very happy to find it quoted in Hamayan, which is a periodical, a volume Lama Dalit, by Rav Yehuda Levi. Some may know him as Leo Levi, who writes there what I've been saying for decades without knowing that he wrote the same thing. Until I discovered it just this week, that the words Tzivu Chachamim, the rabbis commanded, if one looks in the Rambam, and today it's easy. I don't know what kind of searching engines he had when he wrote it, I think in the mid-90s, how advanced the computers were, but today, I think they already had them then. You press a button, Tzivu Chachamim, the Rambam comes out, who knows how many places in the old Rambam. Each and every one, without exception, is not a formal violation. Not a formal issa to begin with. So my answer is not like the Satmar and Kloisenberger that the Isser remains. Not that the Isser was dependent on the reason is not there, so the Isser is not there. And not Esas Lashem. I think all those three are problematic from my perspective. But the fourth possibility is there never was an Isser. Lo hayu devarim me'olam. There never was an Isser. There was a Tzivul Chachamim. There was an Eitzah that the Chachamim say, don't teach your daughter Torah, and Torah Shebichsav is bad, Torah Shebaal Peh is worse. That was the eighth that the Chachamim gave in their day. And today, our Chachamim are permitted, the greatest Chacham, not just anybody, to give a different eitzah. That is, in fact, how I understand the words of the holy Chafetz Chaim. The words of the Chafetz Chaim I'm going to read to you presently. The Chafetz Chaim wrote a sefer called Likutei Halachos, which is a sefer which he cites all the Gemaras and the Maseches that don't have a riff, and he gives his own compilation of how we pass it. We read you the Lashon of the Chafetz Chaim on the Sechta Sota. Nireh, the Cholzeh Dafka Bizmanim Shalafoneinu. In the olden days, that's how it was. Shekabolas Kabolas Ha'ovos Hoysa Chazoka Ma'od Eitzel Kol Echad V'yechad Lisnag B'derech Shadorchu Bo'avosov. was a very strong Kabbalah, Mesorah, from parent to child, and there was no problem for the child to follow in the parent's footsteps. And therefore, the downside, the way I'm interpreting, the downside of over-sophistication of the women outweighed the upside. The alternative was they would do what their mothers and grandmothers had done before them, which was to grow up in the parents' house, to get married very young, to have children, to raise their children, and to just keep right on going. So therefore, she could just rely on her parents, etc. Now, says the Chofetz Chaim, Bavonoseinu Harabim, due to our many sins, Kabbalah sa'ovos nisrofefa ma'od ma'od. The tradition that's passed is not so strong. We call it a generation gap. He didn't use those words. That's what the Chofetz Chaim means. And look what he says now. V'gamotzui she'ena b'mokom avos klal. Woo! Unheard of. It was unheard of for a woman to leave a parent's house before marrying. It was unheard of. She lived in a parent's house till she got married. No, says the Chofetz Chaim. It's common that women are no longer living with their parents and they're presumably no longer not yet married. Bifrat, catch this now. Osan shemargil and atzma, those women who teach themselves, listen carefully, lilmod ksav v'lashon ha'amin. Oh, this is really frightening. They actually are literate. They're literate in the language, the letters and the language of the nations. Which he's saying, the Chofetz Chaim, that until that time, it wasn't that way. They didn't know how to read or write the Lashon Amim. There were many who didn't know how to read or write Hebrew either, for that matter. They spoke Mama Lashon Yiddish, and they were not involved in a world of the written word. They didn't read it, they didn't write it. It's hard to us to believe it. But the Chofetz Chaim, who lived then, is giving Eidus. There's a new phenomenon that he experienced in his day, that they should be proficient in the language of the nations. And I'm adding that many were not proficient in Hebrew either, neither to read nor to write. And they just said Baal Peh. They knew the various things that are zogerim in certain places. It would lead them in their tefillahs. Okay. Therefore, since times have changed, b'vadai mitzvah rabo l'lamed osan chumish. Okay. The great mitzvah teaching of chumish. V'gam deviyim uksuvim. Okay. The whole Torah should, despite what the Rambam said, doesn't say why. So this, I'm reading it from an article by Rabbi Gutal in something called Tali Yisrael, where he writes that the Chofetz Chaim is based upon what? Eis lasis Lashem heferet Torah. And I say, no, that's not what the Chofetz Chaim meant. He never said it. The Chofetz Chaim didn't quote that pasuk. That didn't. He's just saying what he's saying. Okay, let's go on. Musarei Chazal, Meseches Ovis, Menoras Hamor, the classical Musa Sefer, Teumas Etzlon, Inyan Emunoseinu HaKadosha, that they should have proper faith, Emunah, Him lokein, if you won't teach him that. Olul sheyasuru legami biderech Hashem v'yavru al kol yesodei hadas chas v'shol. This is the Likutei Halachot of the Holy Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim was a great man, the greatest leader of the Torah world in his time. And he said it, black and white. He didn't mince any words. He said it really very, very strongly. And I believe that it's not based on Eis Lasis Hashem. I think it's based upon my interpretation. The Neb was an Isser in the first place. It was a Tzibur Chachamim. Now the Chofetz Chaim, in his capacity as the Chacham of Dor, is going to be a different Tzibur, a different Eitzah, in order to see to it that our daughters will be raised properly and to continue the Misorah. That's what I think Pshat is in the Chofetz Chaim, although those can argue, obviously somebody is arguing, and claim that the Chofetz Chaim is based upon Eis Lasos Lashem, Hefer Torah Sech.
He didn't say anything about learning Gemara.
Slow. He did in effect say, he in effect said no. If he's permitting Meseches Ovis, sounds like that there are another 60-something Meseches that he's not permitting. That's what it sounds like. And indeed, Rav Moshe Tshuva, Chelek Dalet Simon, Moshe Tshuva is somewhere, a Tshuva in Igros Moshe, where he follows along the lines of the Chofetz Chaim, and he says they should not be learning Mishnayos except for Pirkei Ovis. Rav Moshe living obviously quite a while after the Igros Moshe Yerodei Chelek Gimel Siman Pei Zayin. That's it, finished. That's what he says. Now, yes. No,
doesn't say why.
Doesn't say, to my knowledge. Look it up in Shuvah. Yes.
I really have to agree with the person who's arguing, you know, with
Eis lasos. You think Eis lasos? Okay.
Because, I mean, the fact of his words that he's just saying things change to the worst, and we're afraid that this and this will happen,
right,
etc. He didn't say anything about was never such a big issue to begin with.
Who said it is an issue? The Rambam's lashon is tibu chachamim. Right? The word also does not appear in the Shulchan Aruch, does not appear in the Rambam.
The Chofetz Chaim would be much happier if things didn't change and we could continue going on the way we were.
I think he would be.
Okay, so where do you get the idea that it's just, you know, like a Tzibur Chachamim doesn't mean that it's an Isser?
Because look at the other 25 places in the Rambam. I mean, you're a man who loves to look things
if,
up.
If there
press
things
your button on Tzibur Chachamim.
If there are things that the Rambam said where he says Tzibur Chachamim, and there is no reason for us today to not do it, don't we do that?
Exactly. So that's exactly. So what I'm saying, that when we have great Talmidei Chachamim,
what? And we say it's not allowed if you do it the other way.
Oh, very good. It's not allowed. You're right. We may use the word Easter colloquially, 100%. But in terms of formally, rigorously, it's not an Easter. I'm willing to meet you halfway. Yeah.
The logic of listening to, I'm not reading it inside, but listening to read the Prophet's Chaim,
right,
is the problem stems from literacy.
Right.
Which was outside of Torah. I mean, you wake up in the morning and we have a literate society as opposed to an illiterate society.
Absolutely true.
Which applied to both men and women.
100%.
So Chaim is saying, in the olden days, if you say teach them Torah Shebiksav, now you have to teach them how to read. So if you were supposed to teach them, then they would be literate. So,
okay. Fine. Excellent. Excellent. I want to take it to the next step by
quoting.
I want to go to the next step and read you a part of a tshuva by Rav Zalman Sarotzkin. Now, Rav Zalman Sarotzkin was already after the Chafetz Chaim. He survived the war, and he wrote his name on the Torah. The main street in Haredi Yerushalayim is named Rechov Sarotzkin after him. He was head of the Vadi Yeshivas in the post-war era in Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael. And he wrote a tshuva sefer called Moznayim LeMishpat. And they asked him, you know, he was the head of Beis Yaakov, in effect. So what's going on over here? Beis Yaakov has gone further. So he writes as follows. The olden days, the Jewish daughters, I'll just give you a paraphrase in English, they could learn the entire Torah from experience. There was no need to teach them from books. Now, many parents are unable to teach their children. They're almost like a nachat shabal is gayer, that their parents can't teach them anymore. Post-war Europe is such a, you know, things. You have to teach a Torah, so you know what to do. Then he goes further. There are non-observant Jews who have their own school system. What was our obligation at that time to strengthen Klal Yisrael by teaching Torah, Bein La'anoshim, Bein L'anoshim. Not only is it mutter to teach them Torah in our generation, it's a chiyuv gomor. It's an absolute obligation, a mitzvah to found schools for girls. Tosha Balpeh. Sorech Lis Yashev. I'm not sure. Tosha B'Chsav. Ein Shum Pikpuk. Tosha Balpeh, he says like this. Be'ian uve pilpul. When it's very deep and a lot of pilpul, then it applies Kol Melamed as Bito Torah. But even Tosha Balpeh, she may learn, quote, the Maskana Achrona below Kushis of Peruk. So she can be taught Torah Shabbat, but all the pilpulim back and forth, she should not be taught. So writes Rav Zalman Sarotzkin in his day, which goes way, way past the Chofetz Chaim. Way past the Chofetz Chaim. Right? I'm just letting you know, because things changed even more. Many years elapsed, continents elapsed, between the time of the Chofetz Chaim, when he wrote the Likutei Halachos, and then Moznayim the Mishpat wrote his Sefer in Eretz Yisrael after World War II.
Say his reason for not allowing
Pilpul. That's a good question.
It's an excellent question. Is it because it would become
immoral? I think you should look up, if you want to look up, Moznayim LeMishpat, Aleph Mem Beis. I'm not sure exactly what it says there. Don't know. But I read you an excerpt.
He wanted to be Makayim. He wanted it to be able to have a way to learn Pshat.
I don't know. Maybe. So let's analyze for ourselves, therefore, if it's up, you know, everyone has to judge for himself. So what, I'm assuming there's no Isser. So there's no Isser, so it's every Rav, or every Rav who's Roy to answer these kinds of questions, can give his own Eitzah. Okay? Now there were those who assumed there was an absolute Isser, but they got out of it the following way. Very interesting way to get out of this one. They said, you can't teach your daughter Torah, but your daughter can learn on her own. Now, if you think this is wild, it's not wild at all. It goes back a long time. There's a shut called Mayan Ganin that is quoted by the Torah Tanima in his parish on Chumash, on the Marat HaMotzim Spenechem and Parshas Ekev. It says like this. If a father teaches his daughter when she's young, we don't know what kind of girl she is. The Rambam said, most women, they're not going to get it right. Okay? But the women, quote, Asher nodav libon osan alakarv al hamalacha, melechas Hashem, mitzad bechirosan betov b'mashu tov, those who chose to learn Torah on their own, hein heina talena b'har Hashem, let them go up to the mountain of Hashem, tishkona b'mokom kotcho, kineshe mofes heina. These are wonderful women. Valchach meidoran la'adron la'hadron la'sadron la'chazek yedein la'amed zero sen. Wow. And we should try to encourage these women, who are the self-selected group, not everybody, those who have chosen to study on their own. Wonderful. You think this is from a Mayan guy you never heard of. There's a sefer called the Prisha, very well known. The Prisha is a commentary on the Tur. And he says as follows. The Rambam wrote, Rov Hanoshim, most women, they can't get it exactly right. That's a majority. This woman who wants Imlamda Liatma, Anu Roim, Sheyatza'a Meharov. She has demonstrated she's not part of the majority, and therefore there's no problem for her to study Torah. As an interesting biographical aside, his wife, the Rebbe's in Prisha, was a tremendous Torah scout. Tremendous. She had said Chidush Torah. She is the one who famously paskined that when women light candles on Yontif, they should make the bracha before and not after. She was castigated by some rabbis who said, quoting Rabbi Elezer, "Ein leisha chochma leveplach." She should have stuck to her weaving and shouldn't have introduced new chidushim. But yet, there are many gedolei rabbanim who said, "No, she's right. She's a big talmidei chachama. She's right." Her husband is the one who's writing this. That he didn't write about his own wife biographically, but apparently he held she was left the majority, and she was a minority, maybe not even a minority of one, but a minority of some, who were able to reach higher levels in the study of Torah. Again,
the problem is there's a Mesorah aspect. They learn by themselves, lack the Mesorah aspect.
That's a good question. So if they learn by themselves, they lack a Mesorah, so someone should have to teach them to give them at least a part taste of the Mesorah. Now remember, this is all according to those who assume that there is a prohibition. So they make the finding exceptions to the prohibition. Where I come from, there was never a formal prohibition in the first place. There's only a tivu chachamim. It's not a good idea. And perhaps you can argue, not a good idea for the amcha, for the vast majority, but there's a minority for whom it may be, in fact, a good idea. This being the case, we would say today that individuals who want to study Torah with a proper reason, they should be encouraged. That those who were studying Torah with what you say, Torah Lishma. Remember, in the olden days, there was very little reason for a woman to want to spend so much time in the study of these ancient books. There was no covenant in it. There was nothing in it. They just had to pure Lishem Shemayim. So the assumption was that it was Lishem Shemayim, and therefore it was considered to be a good idea to encourage that distinct minority that wanted to involve itself in the study of Torah on a higher level. The question today, of course, becomes, as we spoke about last week, Rav Moshe has his famous Shuvach, Dalad Mem Tes in Aruch Chaim, where he's concerned that there are women who want to perform mitzvahs from which they're technically speaking exempt, not because they're exempt and they want to do it anyway, but they're sort of rebelling against the exemption. They want to consider themselves obligated in mitzvahs. Rav Moshe is concerned that that's heretical, as we spoke about last Motzei Shabbos. Similarly, when it comes to studying Torah, it's important to note that it's critical that a distinction does exist between men and women. As it says in the Torah, V'limartem osmas b'neichem, and the Chazal Darshan on that pasuk in Parshas Ekev, b'neichem v'lo b'noseichem, women are not obligated. And those women who somehow are chafing, and they deny that exemption, and they want to consider themselves obligated, run into the same problem that Rav Moshe described with respect to the mitzvah of seishas among Aram. As a matter of fact, some years back, a particular educator wrote that she thinks that the education today should be identical for men and for women. She didn't quite say that women aren't exempt. I don't want to say more than she said. That would have been, according to Rav Moshe, heresy. But she did suggest that identical education should be advanced for all men and all women on a basic level, elementary, high school level. And I think that's completely off base, based on everything we've said until now. Having said all this, we have to go a little further and see that there are individuals who, great Rabbanim, who went even beyond Rav Sorotzkin, perhaps, and said a little bit more. And these are again quoted in the same collection over here. Women today, this is Rabbi Fira, who's quoted from Noam Volume Gimel. In the olden days, if women studied Torah, it was Schoro Yotze Behefseido. In our generation, it's Hefseido Yotze Bischoro. The gain is more than the loss. Why? Women are going to study anyway. They're not going to stay home with their mothers. They're going to study. Much better to study Torah and not Tiflus. Even if you'll say that the Torah is as if it's Tiflus, but it's much better than Tiflus proper. That's for sure. And therefore, that we have to teach them, and he quotes Rav Yaakov Malka, Shut Mikveh Hamayim. The women today, they're studying in all the other subjects, they're filling up the universities, etc., etc., they're running the whole everything. So even Rabbi Elazar will agree there's no prohibition to teach them Torah Shabbat Peh. There's an obligation to teach them as much as possible. This is a very far-reaching definition. Not everyone agrees with it. And there's some sort of a little bit in the middle. He's quoting from Rabbi Kapach, Rabbi Avraham Shapiro, Zichron on the Rocha, that there are certain parts which they should be taught, certain parts they shouldn't be taught. But the question becomes, what's happening today? All this is 20 years old. What's happened in the last 20 years? Things have changed yet again. It's important to be updated a little bit what's happened in the last 20 years. Here in America, things haven't changed all that much. In Eretz Yisrael, there's been a much more significant change in the education of women in what we'll call the, I don't know how to define this world precisely, we'll call it the, I don't know how to say it, the world of, which is called Dati Lumi, some people call it that, there are different names given to this world. I don't want to pigeonhole anybody, but that kind of a world, and they found what they call Midrashot. What are Midrashot? Midrashot are institutions of advanced learning for women. And the question becomes, is this advisable or is it not advisable? So here, people can disagree based on what they think is advisable. Again, if you consider it to be an absolute prohibition, it's very hard to talk, but I'm assuming there's no prohibition. It's a question of what the Tzibur Chachamim is today, and different people coming from different places and observing different societies can legitimately reach different conclusions. In the Midrashot, so this article here begins, talking about the founding of many of these institutions. There are many with different, you know, they study this, they study that. But no one seems to be screaming, and these are, how should we say it? These are institutions which are completely devoted to halacha. They're learning Torah Shabbat Peh, they're teaching Torah Shabbat Peh, teaching Gemara, and these are existing more and more. And the question becomes, well, how do you justify this? So frankly, it doesn't bother me in the first place, because in my opinion, there's no prohibition in the first place. My proof is that in so many different schools, they're studying Chumash and Rashi. And once you open up a Rashi, what is Rashi anyway? Rashi is almost completely Torah Shabbat Peh. To my knowledge, in all the regular Beis Yaakovs in Eretz Yisrael, in the most Haredi second of discussing the Kloisenberg and Satmar, they have their own, they don't want Chumash. But the Beis Yaakovs learn Chumash with Rashi, they learn Chumash Rashi, Parshas Mishpatim, the same as Parshas Bereishis. Bereshit you can argue it's about Amuna. Mishpatim is basically Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, and Baba Basra. You know, as Rashi cuts and pastes it to explain the Pesukim. They're all learning it. So to my knowledge, this proves beyond a doubt that there's no prohibition of Torah Shebaal Peh in a literal sense. I mean, it is. That's what Rashi is, Torah Shebaal Peh. What's the difference if you cut and paste it? Or if you open up the book, I don't see a difference on a fundamental level. Okay. Nonetheless, the question becomes, how far do we go with this so-called revolution? What's advisable and what's not advisable? So here we find differences of opinion. And I repeat it again, we have to respect other opinions, I believe. Even as we have to, you know, if we have different opinions, to uphold them and to defend them and explain what the various opinions are based upon. So I'll read you a citation from great Talmud Chacham, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Shalita. Really a very, very big gon and a big tzaddik, and someone to whom I have a great debt of personal gratitude and for my youth. And he writes as follows. But you know, we should teach, not only we should, it's advisable to give intensive chinuch to girls in Torah Shebaal Peh. We should give much more than they're getting right now. I'm not sure what year he was writing this exactly. If I can find it. I'm not sure. I think within the last 20 years, if I'm not mistaken. And we should make it more Torah Shebaal Peh. And I have no opposition to women studying Gemara. All right, he says, it's difficult because they don't have so much motivation. They don't have there's no social background for it. And there's no she'ifa, the desire to become completely involved in it in the future. And I am not convinced that it's proper or advisable to pressure a girl to study Gemara in an intensive fashion. No, that not. But to enable her to study a Daf Gemara and to understand it and to enjoy it, I see no reason whatsoever not to lead her in that direction. And here's the key line. I'm reading to in Hebrew. V'tzarich afilu lemased etzeh, to institutionalize it. Kechelek integrali, okay, an integral part, shel lemida bebeis ha-sefer, as studying in school, shiur mamashi, a real shiur, and I think it's the derech ha-mumletzes, the tzibur ha-banos bidoreinu, in our generation. He's not saying it should have been done 100 years before, and 100 years from now we don't know. And he says, ha-limud ha-mamik toreim ha-arbe l'chinuch ha-bas l'yir ha-shamayim u'l'chaye Torah. Studying at a deep level will contribute a lot that the woman will have greater Yirat Shamayim, a greater life of Torah, so the halacha should be an integral part of her life. I certainly can't agree more with the last paragraph, which desires this for all Jewish women. My question, and I raise it as a question, is, in fact, will the institutionalizing of this to be a something which has becomes expected, even if there's no formal pressure, but you have the peer pressure. Once it becomes an integral part of the curriculum, not the pressure, Chana or Sarah, to do it, it's part of the curriculum. Even if it's not absolutely mandatory, once the option is out there in every school, then it's going to become difficult for a girl, especially a bright girl, who doesn't want to do this, to say no to it. After all, it's a recognized option.
Aren't we putting ourselves in danger of? It's like kind of like teaching people advanced football, but you're not allowed to play.
Exactly. Exactly. So the question becomes:
as they learn more and more, they'll feel worse and worse about what their limitations are.
Exactly. Yeah, Eddie, you said a very smart thing.
The obvious extension. Woman teaching a class, and she'll be teaching boys.
That extension exists in our community already. When I say in our community, I mean in within the Eruv. I'm not going into details. I don't think that's right, but I can't take a chryas, so everything goes on within our eruv.
But that's where this is going. You just said,
it's not going, it's gone.
It's gone.
Gone.
Go one step further. Rabbinical college and
smicha. Exactly. Well, that's already happened in this community as well. Our eruv is it's very all in common. We have a big tent here over there. It also happens.
So we'll be driving the
Chas v'shalom. We're not discussing that community. Okay, so the question becomes, you know, what do we have to worry about? Your points are very well taken. A mother came to complain in a different context. A young lady had studied in Revel, the graduate school of Jewish studies 20 years ago, and then she came to complain to one of the rabbis. Okay, what's she going to do with it? That was then. How much more so if she's studying Gemara and with the pilpul and with the halachas and everything? What's she going to do with it? That's the question. I do believe that it's very important that our women be educated to be able to teach their children and do their homework with them up to a certain point. I would say that by the time they have a son who's ready to learn Gemara, that the father should kick in a little bit, you know, instead of being in his law office till midnight, let him come home early and spend time learning Gemara with his son. But until that time, where there's a need to teach the children the basics, I believe that the mother, it's critical she know the basics. I agree with you 100%. But what about this intensive kind of study that's cropped up primarily in Eretz Yisrael for the last 20 years or so? So there are certain issues which are already being brought up. There's a group which is called the Orthodox Forum. It's been around also for, I think, about 20 years approximately, and it's the same last 20 years. And I've been, should I say it nicely, sort of compelled to participate as a part of my responsibilities in the yeshiva. And I've been there a little bit, read some of the papers that are being distributed. I don't want to get personal, but you can look it up. These things are available in the book form or online form. I believe it was the forum of 2003, in which a paper written by a woman who heads such an institution. The first sentence of the paper, which then goes at length to describe the advanced Jewish Torah learning in Eretz Yisrael, is about the reconfiguration of Jewish leadership in our times. So you right away, the first sentence talks about reconfiguring leadership, which is, of course, as you said, it's going to be a natural outgrowth of all this Torah learning. And that runs into issues which we have it on our agenda for way down the road. Positions of authority, I think that's next to the last year. We'll get to the specifics of that, but it's a bit disquieting. As a matter of fact, at that forum, which I attended live, there was some very strong words exchanged by different people, and it had to do with various definitions of what is leadership, what is appropriate, what is inappropriate, in terms of women not just studying in a study hall or in a place of learning, but going out into the real world and applying that learning in a practical way. This has different flavors in different places. Our community has its own different flavors. It's a complex issue, and I believe it does give one a bit of some pause. And the most recent, which took place in the spring of this past year, which is 2010, an additional paper was written updating those advances in Jewish education and we'll call it a post-high school level. And frankly, I was a little bit uneasy about some of the new developments, not so much from the perspective of authority or paskening shailos, etc., from a different angle, in which the desire, which I'm sure comes from a good place, there's no doubt in my mind, the desire to mimic the yeshiva system perhaps takes things a little bit too far. Now, in the yeshiva, it's not just a place where we study Torah. It's not just a place where you read a book and you understand something and it gets into your mind and you absorb it and you can write about it and you can take it somewhere. It's much more of an experience. Now, the desire of the women to share similar experience was running into certain problems, which means what happened? So the woman is experiencing this, but then if she gets married and has children and she's in a community, she can't recapture or recreate that same experience. So, you know, I feel for these women as I feel for men who have to leave their yeshiva and go to other communities, and they just can't recapture the same experience either. I'm not a big fan of men, before we get to women, who leave their families behind and go to places far away to reach higher levels of experiential Judaism on the high holidays or things of this nature. I've spoken about it in the past. Not the time to go into it at great length. But the new phenomenon, which was described in this paper, is women who are in effect establishing their own, experiential Yom Kippur, where they come together, hundreds and hundreds of women. The problem is, of course, you have to have men. You can't have it. These are halachic women, completely halachic. And so with the permission of the Rosh Yeshivas, they got a significant number of men. There wasn't just 10 people. I think they had 50 men who davened 50 men with 500 women. I don't know how many hundred women behind the mechitza. And the shmuz, you know, like the rabbi speaks after Kol Nidre, was given by I'm not sure what title, Menahelet, or I'm not sure exactly what title of the women's seminary has, the leader of the seminary. I mean, it's natural she should give it because it's her place. It's her place. And the 50 men, you know, listened politely. So I said, you know, wait a minute. This just rubs me as something which has gone way past the basic idea of teaching Torah to women. It just, you know, I'm just commenting that it...
the idea of sneers.
This was sneers. Sneers was observed completely. Total sneers. You know, you're saying, perhaps, maybe you mean, that if a woman is speaking in the presence of men, that itself is a lack of sneers. But in certain circles, as we spoke about a little bit last week, that's commonplace. Women speak in the presence of men on a regular basis. Perhaps not in shul on Kol Nidre night. Okay, but why not? I'm presenting it. I'm trying to be even-handed over here. I feel somewhat uneasy about it.
Only the women get to the appeal, so...
We have to have a light moment. But it is a, to me... To me, these are interesting new phenomena. Now, what we don't really have time to talk about today too much, but I just want to give a very brief introduction. Perhaps we'll get to it in our upcoming shiurim. Is Rav Moshe said that women are exempt from Talmud Torah. Why? Because of their responsibilities to take care of their children. That's the reason that he gives, as we spoke about last week. Then the question is, okay, so she's exempt. And yes, we would think that as Rav Moshe said it, the most important job that she has is to bear and raise children. Well, that's not the only job. We mentioned just the Chalashudis from the Akedas Yitzchak, who said that a woman is called an Isha, and she's also called Chava. She had two names. And that raising children is not her only, quote, job. It's a secondary job, the Akedah writes. You know, the primary job is to be a mensch, to be her own person. Nonetheless, the question is balancing these things. You know, we just had some company today for Shabbos, and the woman proudly said that she has a degree, an advanced degree, but she's a proud, stay-at-home mother. And she goes to the park with the kids and sees her friends' kids are being raised by nannies. Liminehen, the umosehen, we said today, l'shono, l'goyehen, all different. She said, I don't want that for my children. I want to raise my children myself. And the truth is, I believe in that. I can't criticize women who have different views. So the argument will be, well, look, if another woman is allowed to be a lawyer, right, and she's not raising her kids, so I want to sit in the Beis Medrash and study Talmud. So I want to raise my kids. Well, what's the difference? How can it be one? So the answer, of course, becomes we have to say, what is the Tzibur Chachamim? What is it that the Chachamim of the generation or of the particular community think is advisable and not advisable? You know, this my same Rabbi Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said, leave out women, men. It's terrible. He said that some of his men tell me, particularly in America, become lawyers and they're absentee fathers. I mentioned it before. They don't take care of their own children. You know, it's a hard life. They're partners and they're working so hard. So even that's not ideal. Kal v'chomer, he would say, about women. And you have to be careful when you're teaching the women so much and they want to study more and more and more and more. Will this lead to fewer children? Or not as good a training of the children? These are not things that we are encouraging. So we have to be very careful in this issue. Now, I'm out of time. I can't discuss it this week. I'm going to show you the book. I discovered this today. I got it for the first time. A book entitled Feminism V'Yahadut. It's an excellent work. I've read the first half of it already today. Written by Dr. Avi Weinrot, an uncle of our own Zevi Weinrot. He has a lot to say about these important issues. Next week, we're supposed to move to a discussion of tefillah. But perhaps we will introduce it first with some remarks about Torah, because Torah and tefillah are not completely separate from each other. Shavua Tov. Thank you.